Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast, the aura farming movement. What is it? Why does it matter? How do we move from aura farming to the way of Jesus? If you're a parent and you're alive, this is stuff you need to know. We're going to talk about that in a second. To everyone who's rated, subscribed, left a comment, I have to tell you, it has been such a gift that you have. Please just pause for 10 seconds. Would you just even rate? That's the very simple thing to do. But even rate, subscribe, leaving a comment, it helps so much on this with the content. So thank you for everyone that's done that. Also, we have some exclusive releases on YouTube. Maybe a little interview that you did with this little guy, your brother, John Mark.
JMC,
John Mark Homer, live at our motherhood retreat. We had him come out. Fun surprise, by the way. We literally told no one that he was going to be there. And he was really gracious to come and spend the morning with us and had a great just live conversation with you and your brother. And anyway, it was just a really fun time. That whole episode is only exclusively on YouTube, so please go over there, subscribe. But just to let you know, that conversation was really funny, very fun. And we surprised everyone. No one knew he was there. And I love that little guy. So he's older than me and physically taller, but he's just holds a nice, tender split place in my heart. But the aura farming movement. Now,
what the heck is aura farming?
I know. When I brought this up as an episode, I was like, sweetie, we need to do this. Your response was like, it was that.
What are you talking about?
Well, if you've been around the internet at all lately, you've seen this phrase floating around. And basically, it's someone who tries to look really effortless and cool. And you, like the calm face, the slow motion, perfect lighting, that person that makes you feel like you've just like entered your main character era. It's like that vibe. Someone's just like effortless. And it's just like you're aura farming. You're just farming aura is the idea. And aura is a great Gen Z word. And I love this as a phrase. And, you know, obviously, A, we're telling you this because this is your kids. You know about this if you're listening and you at all are present.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this is the thing. And your kids know about it. And it's real. But
what my mind is going to is, does it mean like you are projecting to other people what you want people to believe about you, see about you, even though it may not be entirely true?
The world says project your greatness, aura farming. Jesus says become like a child. Yeah. And that's actually what we're going to talk about today. Because many people listening have children. But then at the very same time, this is the invitation for every adult that is alive. Yeah. If you're a father, a mother, married, just a human that's alive trying to walk with Jesus, this is the world that we're in.
Well, when Jesus said that, he wasn't talking to a group of parents. He was talking to the disciples, which I'm sure some of them were parents.
They were probably.
I'm sure many of them were not.
They were probably using modern day language like aura farming.
Yeah.
And here's the truth. We've all done a version of that. And maybe you've done that on TikTok or not. But it's how we talk or we even lead. And we're just trying to constantly curate a version of who we are.
Yeah.
And that's not just over social media or on the internet. That's actually a lot of the time, even in person, we do this. Mm-hmm. And so basically, how do we counter this aura farming movement? How do we help our kids do that? And how do we help just live in a more genuine way? Want to read a quick scripture that is just loaded. It's been a verse that you and I've read countless times. Many of you have listening have heard countless times, but I'm going to have you, Elizabeth, break this down.
Yeah.
But the truth of it is so deep. It's so beautiful. And it has so much meaning for not only this topic of like the aura farming movement, but also it has a ton of help just really practically about how to live this into your life and not follow what culture is saying around this. Mm-hmm. And then really at the end, not even at the end, really in the middle, we're going to have five ways to move from this idea that of aura farming to that, yeah, to the way of Jesus. So this will be practical as well. I'm going to read the scripture and then why don't you explain it? Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So Matthew 18, 1 through 5, very brief. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" I have to pause there. Your kids do this. Like Sloan literally asked me yesterday. She gets on my bed. I'm reading my Bible. She goes, "Do you love God more than me?" And I was like,
keeps asking this question. I was like, I don't know how to answer this.
Well, sweetheart, I think order of importance, we love God more than anything. And I also love you more than anything. You know, that was my answer, not getting mm-hmm. around it.
Non-answer.
Yeah, that's how you do it. He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, think about young dudes. He's speaking to a group of people that are currently relevant at that moment. "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." So Elizabeth, you already said this, but just to set it up, this is, he's talking to the disciples. These were the people that literally walked with Jesus and they're arguing about who is best. And I really think that should encourage us all. They were still missing the point. And how often do we just miss the point? So anyway,
yeah,
that's the verse. Give us maybe a couple insights to this to set up our conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard this verse my whole life and just recently did like a deep dive study on it for something else I was getting ready for. And it just was like mind-blowingly amazing to understand what it means. Mm. And even that phrase, the kingdom of heaven, which we'll get into, Jesus says it over 50 times in the New Testament alone. And that the kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven, used all throughout the story of the Bible. Mm. And I don't know that I'd ever fully understood what it meant. So just briefly, we're going to unpack like what these verses actually mean. So the disciples are saying, who's the best? Jesus calls over a little kid and he says, unless you actually like change, meaning it like permeates your heart and you have like deep, actual embodied heart and life change and become like children. Now, to the disciples at that time in the first century, they would have immediately, intuitively known that children represented kind of the least of these, the dependent, the lowly, the desperate, because they were so dependent on other people of low status. So it's like Jesus is saying, unless you become kind of like, maybe not the outcast, but like people of low, low position, low status, no influence, unless you become like that, you're not going to experience the kingdom of heaven. So they would have immediately known like what he meant when he says like a child. And it doesn't mean we go back in time and become our younger self. It means just anybody who is in great need. So this is coming on the heels of, you know, remember a few chapters before is the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus is laying out like his way, his like recipe for flourishing, like what it means to actually be a follower of Jesus. And it's, you are flourishing if you mourn, if you are hungry, if you are weak, like that's what he's laying out. So he's kind of reiterating that when he uses the child as an example. And then he says, unless you become like that, you won't experience the kingdom of heaven. And this is the part that was so eye-opening to me because I didn't understand, like, we think of heaven in the English language as like a place, right? Mm-hmm. But what he's actually talking about is the rule and the reign of a king, like actually being under the rule and the reign of a king, which obviously involves a place. Kings are rulers of a place. But what he's saying is you won't actually experience like me, my rule and reign in your life on earth as it is in heaven in both places, not just a someday thing, but like a right now. You won't experience my active rule and reign personally in your own life unless you become a person of great need. And not having it all together, actually the opposite, not being somebody who desperately does not have it all together and needs the king to come and rule and reign and take care of you and provide for you. And then like the kicker in verse 5 is, and anybody who welcomes a little child in my name, which means represents me to that little child, also welcomes me. And it's welcomes me into their life. So think of like your little kids that you're taking care of, that you're representing Jesus to on a daily basis. As you do that, you are welcoming the Spirit of God. You are welcoming Jesus into your own life. This was like a personal discussion with the disciples. He was not preaching to a crowd of thousands saying like, I'll come and rule and reign in your town, or I'll be present in America. It's no, I will be in your heart, in your life. I'll rule and reign over you. And that just, what's the term? Aura farming?
Yeah.
That, it's like the opposite of what that is actually how we experience Jesus, how we experience him transforming our lives.
Yes. Very well said. And I think it's a perfect setup that we're trying to pit these two against each other, because that's the case, is aura farming versus formation. And our world teaches the opposite. We've been trained to build image of greatness. Like everyone right now, threes on the Enneagram. My goodness, you're taking over the internet. you want to farm aura. You just want to look peaceful, successful, in control. But like, let's be honest, you film that thing and you still have tension with your husband, or tension with your wife, or you still have tension with your kids and struggles and pain and health concerns. And it's all there. And so how can we be the type of people that are just the opposite of that and bringing wholeness and transparency and humility into the world? And that's what we really want to talk about, because no one needs to farm any more aura. No one needs to know how spectacular you are. Henry Nouwen, I love this quote. Very helpful. The long, painful history of the church is the story of people ever and again tempted to choose power over love, control over the cross, and being spectacular over being faithful. We would love to be spectacular over being faithful. Being faithful is really hard. And that's essentially, you know, that's what aura farming is. It's this need to be spectacular, but Jesus invites us into something deeper to be formed. And that's what formation does. It's hidden, it's slow, it makes you dependent. You're dependent upon Jesus just like a child is. And when we welcome this, it changes us in a beautiful, deep way. And so, I mean, in our moment, I think, yes, hopefully this is for you listening, but also this is something that I really think your kids need to start hearing from you. You take this even as a script, these five different practices to move from aura to wholeness, to even start talking to your kids about, because your kids are involved and so deeply rooted in this cultural moment where they feel this need, just like we do, to like, we need to make sure that we have all this dialed. We need to make sure that we're doing all this. And so I just want to walk, I think for the rest of our time, I just want to walk through these five different things, and they're not going to be very long. And this episode doesn't need to be extended as much as it just needs to be pointed to, like, this is a script that we would encourage you to use in your life, but also with your kids. Even with your spouse, like, I mean, sometimes there's the whole thing as an Instagram husband. That's such a funny,
I love that. Yeah.
Gosh, like just with the deadest face in the world, like taking photos of their wife, like, oh my gosh, this is killing me. And there's no shade on that if that's you.
Let's make all of these very not magical moments look magical.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's a moment where our world's just kind of like, okay, well, I think we're good with that.
I think we all know intuitively, we're all kind of over it. Yeah. Like, really, I mean,
because no one's life is actually like that all the time. And we all know that. And if you're honest with yourself, you know that too. It's nice to project though. I mean, it's nice because it makes you feel good. You're farming some aura. That's the idea. Anyway, first thing, just first way to move from aura to wholeness is choose hiddenness over hype. And so, and some of these are alliterated just because that's how we think, but hiddenness over hype, I think it's a really important detail. And that's that idea that this is the spiritual discipline of secrecy. Now that spiritual discipline, by the way, it does not mean you keep secrets and don't tell anyone anything. But the idea is secrecy of like when something really amazing happens next time, try not to tell anyone about it. You know how hard that is?
when you have like really cool things that are going on and you have to like hold it in, or you decide to hold it in and it sounds like, oh, I'll be able to do it. Just try it. When it like, when you saying it could make you look better, when you saying it could make your ego feel good, it is really hard to practice serving without posting. It's a very hard detail. And so, and that's just, I mean, honestly, that's Matthew 6 stuff. Like, be careful not to practice your righteousness before other people to be seen by them. And the more time we spend unseen with God, the less time you need to be seen by people. And that's a really important phrase that I want to highlight.
Ooh, say that again.
The more time you spend unseen with God, the less you need to be seen by people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really important part. I've lost you on your phone. What are you looking
at? I'm looking for a really good quote about hiddenness. I'm probably not going to find it, but it's.
Well, you can look. I just.
It's this idea that Jesus was essentially hidden for 30 years before he ever had a public ministry. And I think, you know, the first point, choose hiddenness over hype. And I also think embrace your seasons of hiddenness, which is the majority of raising kids. Mm. So much is hidden. And so much deep formative work happens in the non-glamorous day-to-day moments. We all know this intuitively, but because of social media, because of the world we live in, it's like our subconscious doesn't always accept that or know it. It feels like, well, somebody else's life is better because we're seeing this one moment of it. But really like leaning into the hidden seasons and asking God, what do you have to teach me there? Mm. And that sounds great. That's really hard sometimes, especially if you have any desire to help people, to influence people. Mm. If you have a desire for ministry, hiddenness is hard.
It's really hard. It's actually, but it's also, I think, a necessity. It's a prerequisite to, if you're going to do work in the kingdom, that is the prerequisite of usually everyone that God uses, is that he hides them. And I mean, we have so many years. I mean, we're helping people and getting to do some fun things right now. And we're honored by that. But if we were to sit down with you and truly walk you through the last years of pain,
20 years,
20 years of disappointments, confusion, like, God, are you even there? Did you put this on my heart, or am I a narcissist? You know, the questioning of yourself, your call, your God, like all of it, it's such a real part.
And I think, I mean, to continue that on, even to highlight our life right now, a lot of what people see is this, right? I was kind of having a bad attitude right before we recorded of like, let's do this next episode and then I'm going to go to my other full-time job. I was having a bad attitude about all the things that need to happen at our home right now that are super behind on. And what am I saying almost on a daily basis right now? I don't know how to like juggle all of these different worlds. Mm-hmm. This just feels like everything's moving too fast. Like there's so much of our life right now that might look a certain way to people, but the ins and outs are messy and they're hard. And there's a lot that is hidden and there's a lot that isn't.
Hype is not always as fun as it seems. But to say that, that's a great point, that so much of life is mixture and you're going to see one part of our life. And then, but that's the truth with most of the folks that we're even talking about, like ourselves included, like you might see some of these parts of where we're able to, like, whether it's events or it's social media or something, and maybe that impacts you or hits you in a cool way. And that is such a small amount percentage-wise of our actual life, right? Like those are parts of our life. And if we were to follow you around with a phone or with cameras, you would have some pretty cool moments too. And I just ought to say, like, anyway, I think the point is that, especially in ministry, especially when you're wanting to do work of the kingdom, hiddenness is a prerequisite to greatness. And anyone that God uses greatly, he usually hides for a very long time. And that's a lot of, anyone that I know that is doing impactful things in the kingdom has stories like that. And so it should just give you hope. Like, your hiddenness is not forever. If God's put a desire on your heart, most of the time he doesn't put the desire to take it away. He puts the desire there to help you pray into it. And in the process of it being born, I think birth is a great analogy, of it growing and being born. That happens. I was talking to a friend last night and he's just feeling he's successful in lots of different ways. As a business owner, multiple businesses, like a very capable, strong dude. And his main phrase is like, all of us would look at him and go, dude, you figured it out. He's 40 and he figured it out. And he's in the honest parts of his conversation. Like, I just feel like God's putting this thing in my heart and it's about to, it needs to be born. And I'm ready to actually do what I'm made to do. And so anyway, I think that's a perfect analogy. Yeah. He's been hidden for a long time. I think God's starting to call him into the next chapter of meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying, honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
I found that quote.
Yeah.
Maybe be a good segue into the next one. It says, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in a smelly animal pen, followed by hidden days. He was consecrated in the temple on his 14th day, followed by hidden months. Before turning two, Jesus received a visit from Eastern wise men, followed by hidden years. At the age of 12, Jesus got in trouble for staying in the temple, listening and asking questions when he was supposed to be with his parents, family, headed back home, followed by almost two entirely hidden decades.
That's really helpful.
Yeah. Alicia Britt. I can't remember the name of the book that's from. It's a phenomenal book about hiddenness, but sure. 90% of Jesus' life was hidden.
Yeah. That should give you hope, everyone.
Yeah.
Second, practice honesty instead of image management. I don't know about you guys, but I just would love some, I mentioned this at the Motherhood Retreat and a lot of ladies laughed because I think it just hits home is why don't we see like get ready with me videos of women like waking up in the morning, just looking almost dead, being like, get ready with me as I walk into a day where everyone needs me and I've only had coffee and one beef stick and I am not had time to shower and everyone's been touching me and my husband expects me to be a romantic partner at the end of the day. Like, why don't we see, that's honest.
Yep.
That's Thursday.
And actually there would be no getting ready in that scenario.
So actually just go into the day with me. You know, like I think that's honest. And and there's a beauty in confessing your weakness.
Yeah.
And we admit when you're struggling and instead of polishing the story, and I think we're all tempted, especially in Christian culture, we do that. We are so tempted to polish the story and to say, but God is good. Totally. Yeah. And your life is really hard. And Christians, we don't have to say God is good. It's a pretty known deal. And he is good, regardless of if you say it right then. But when we do that as a way to kind of like pivot and not deal with the grief and not deal with the pain of the situation that you're in, you just prolong some of his goodness, in my opinion, because you can't be open to what he's trying to do sometimes. And so I think that's a part of this is that we need to get to a spot where like, man, can we just be honest? Like life is really hard and there's not necessarily a lot that I'm pumped about right now. Right. Yeah. That's okay to say that.
Yeah.
There's permission.
It makes me think of, we've said it a lot on here, but when you go first and you're just honest and vulnerable first, you just pave the way for everybody else being able to say, oh, me too. You know, C.S. Lewis said, friendship is born at the, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it's something like friendship is born at the moment when somebody says, oh my goodness, you too. Yeah. Like something like that. Like I just butchered the quote, but you get the idea.
That's pretty close.
When someone's honest about their struggle, we feel permission. Not that we need permission, but in our current culture, we feel like we do. To like, okay, this is a safe place for me to say how I actually feel. And I know that's like really important to us, like in our journey of the last 20 years of all that we've walked through, like just being honest about, is God good and has he done miraculous, beautiful things? And do we have beautiful opportunities right now? Yes. Is life still really hard and are there parts we're still wrestling with? And do I still live in chronic pain every day? And is that hard on the whole family? And yes, Both can be true at the same time. And I think it starts with being honest with ourselves, with God. But then when we can just be honest with others and walk around being people that give permission for others to be vulnerable, that's like life-changing and world-changing and community-changing all at the same time.
Yes. And I couldn't agree more. And to add to what, not much, but just to add that little phrase is with beauty is often pain. Tension is the most common part of the human experience, and that we live in mixture all the time. That mixture is the most consistent thing, that things are really beautiful and usually really challenging all at the same time. Yeah. And especially in adulthood, I think it just becomes so much more clear, especially in the middle years. You just, there's 5 or 10 things that you can be like, this is incredible. I cannot believe, God, your faithfulness and kindness and gentleness with me in this. And then there's usually 5 or 10 things equally as challenging on the opposite end of the spectrum that you're like, how come, why, God, are you even there?
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to name that experience so that no one feels like that's actually abnormal. I think that's a very normal place, this side of heaven. We live in the now and the not yet. Tension is built into the fabric of the kingdom and into us, this side of heaven. And so just to be encouraging to you, live in honesty. When someone asks how you're doing, be honest. There's nothing more refreshing when someone's like, honestly, not that great. Like, oh, now we can be real. Like now I don't have to be like, oh, I'm good. Like, no, you're not. And most of us are fine. And obviously you can't do this with everyone because certain people just maybe don't even know how to hold that. So obviously there's discernment there. But
yeah, but even that, I was thinking of like, even if the person on the other end can't hold what you just said, and they need to reframe it to the positive. And, you know, there's always a moment of grief there where you're like, you just didn't see me at all.
Yeah.
Take that as a moment. If you want to influence people, take that as a moment of you just taught them something, even if it doesn't bear fruit right now, you taught them that it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
And that life can still okay.
Yeah.
Even if they can't absorb it in that moment. So like that desire for influence that we all have, you just had a moment of influence when that happened.
Yeah.
That's and so you need true. People in your life who can hold you saying, no, it's a really bad day. you need both.
Well, I want to say something. Recently, I heard there was a podcast, which will remain unnamed, but a husband and wife had jumped on there. And this will be so vague that people will be like, I'm going to try to figure it out. You won't figure it out. And that's fine. And I don't want you to. But they had jumped on and they were kind of repeating like why their life is so good. And I would say, and their life does sound really good. It actually sounded so good. I was like, probably not that good. And what they'd said, and their hearts, I want to say this, these are well-meaning, godly, sweet people. I'm sure that their attempt and their hope was to like give people hope. But as someone who thinks about this all the time, as I'm listening to this podcast, this guy was talking about how basically his life is so good because his wife sets his life up for him so much. So he's sitting there describing like why his life was so good. And it really actually just came down to the fact that he's so busy in work and she's so thoughtful at home that he doesn't have to think about anything to the point where everything's always stocked, everything's always done, everything's always fine. And she just loves her role in the home. She's thriving in it. And I was like, that is so cool that that's their experience. I don't know many people, if any, and it's not our experience, where that is the norm. Yeah. And so you gave us an example of something that I don't live in, and now I'm depressed because my wife doesn't just serve me and have complete space to just have.
You're stealing from my aura.
To just like, why don't I have 7 deodorants so when I run out of one, you can get me a new one? Like, this is the kind of stuff though. There's not shade. I know that their heart was actually good. I'm trying to highlight that when we're not honest, like that's the good part of their life. That's cool. But there's no way that that's the whole of their life. So when you even hear people, good people, godly people say to you, yeah, this is what our life looks like. Just know that that's not the whole story. Yeah. That is a version of aura farming that is not sharing the whole piece. Now, they were probably discerning like, I don't really want to talk about the argument we had the other night. And I don't really want to talk about that time when I called you a bad word or what, you know, like you're not wanting to talk about that in a podcast space. I get it. I also think that it doesn't help a lot of people when we're not honest. Yeah. I am more helped by people that go, I'm pretty broken. I'm like, I can really relate with that. I'm pretty broken too. Okay. Those are my people.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just think the more we're honest, the more you actually help people. If you really want to help people, just be really honest. And that's not always easy to do. But I think it's really fruitful. So maybe the third one.
Yeah. Embrace slowness over spectacular. Ooh.
So I think the idea with this is you want to slow down long enough for your soul to catch up to your schedule. Mm. This is a big one for us as things get busier.
I'm like, this is preaching right now.
Yeah.
In real time.
Well, as our lives get fuller with what would be deemed as good things, mm-hmm. ministry things, opportunities, speaking, travel, events, podcasts, different things that we have the opportunity to do. We're honored to do it. There is a really very real thing happening in real time for us where it is hard for our soul to keep pace with our schedule mm-hmm. and trying to figure out how to be doing the good things that God invites us into and that we've just been invited to by people and also our soul's pace. That is a very tricky dance. And I think for me personally, this is a place of like deep learning. Like, how do I slow down long enough for my soul to catch up to my schedule? I'm honestly a real work in progress with that, like currently. But I also think that if we can start with that place, using that as a goal, I think it's a gift. So
it just makes me think of, I've been reading through the Gospels recently and noting how busy Jesus was, like how full his life was of service mm-hmm. and doing so many good things. I think sometimes we hear things like embrace slowness and we think that just means do less.
Yeah.
And sometimes it absolutely does. Or do less of the things that are maybe of lesser importance and more of, you know, have more margin for the things that are important. But, you know, we talked about in the Q&A at the Motherhood Retreat, one of the first questions was about like self-care as a mom. And I think I was the one who answered it and said, I think we need a reframing of what we consider self-care because really it needs to be soul care. I mean, when we look at the rhythms of Jesus, when he took a moment to slow down and to come out of all of his service and all of what he was doing, it was to fill his soul. It wasn't to get a massage and go on a girl's weekend. And
I don't think Jesus went on a girl's weekend, to be honest.
I don't think he did.
I don't think that was his deal.
You fill in the blank with what your thing is. And I'm not saying any of those things are bad.
No, I mean, I
remember years ago talking to your therapist and we were trying to make sense of the rhythm of our life, which I feel like is like a common theme for us. Here we are years later, still trying to make sense of the rhythm of our life. And he was saying, he's like, yeah, you like Elizabeth, you taking a night away every quarter to rejuvenate, all those things, those are great. They don't actually fix the problem of there is no margin in your day-to-day, week-to-week life. You need to fix that problem. Yes, vacations will help. They're great. Silence and solitude, great. Do them. They don't fix the problem. And I think when you look at the rhythm of Jesus and the things that he did to reorder his soul, to fill his soul, that's very different than just doing these things we now call self-care, which I'm not saying those things are bad or not important.
Oh, they are. It's just where they land. And I would agree with you that self-care is different than soul care. And I think the reason Jesus could hold so much and be outwardly busy, but also do it from a place of strength and calmness was because he was caring for his soul,
yes,
not for himself.
Yeah.
And that's an important distinction
that
he was actually doing the things that were soul refreshing because that's where strength comes from to do the types mm-hmm. of things that Jesus is calling you to do. So I think it's soul strength, not self strength. And it's really easy to get that mixed up. But I think the spectacular things are really fun. My personality loves spectacular things. But I've also learned like there'll be more spectacular things. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have your sanity, if you really want to do great work in the outside of your home, you have to start taking care of all the things inside your home. The inside world will destroy the outside world. And that's both true for your soul and your family and your home. And so if you don't care for what's internal, it ruins everything that could be external. So as a heads up, learn from a deep place of experience. So fourth, cultivate childlike dependence. Mm. And this is pretty straightforward, but the idea, ask for what you need instead of proving you can do it yourself. I think so many people are delayed in God inviting them into their call because they're so stubborn and are so controlling and they want to do it all on their own. And truly in my experience, because I know, because I've been in that space, God will literally wait you out until you're willing to open your hand truly and release full control in an honest way. And I think so many people are delayed in God using them in beautiful ways because they are need for deep control. And until you deal with that, with Jesus, maybe with a therapist, a family member, wherever it comes from, I think you are, my personal experience, we become delayed in accessibility and being used because God can't use you if you're like, it's got to be this way, God. Like, I'll do that, but kind of this way. And I will, I want to do that, but I don't want to do it if it's this, and I will not do it if it's there. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to inconvenience myself. That heart posture changes everything for usability. So I would just say, cultivate that childlike dependence. And it's a huge part of this because wholeness grows when you let God father you. Like when you are like, okay, God, I'm a child. I need you to guide me. But I mean, that's the cry of all of our hearts. And so we have to cultivate it.
For those of us who have kids in our home actively right now, like even taking a minute each day to just observe your kids and with that scripture that we read in mind, Matthew 18, 1-5, like Jesus literally said to the professional Christians, his disciples, like imitate and become like children. And so even watching the qualities of our kids who just unashamedly ask for help, demand help, help me right now, you know, like full dependence, are dependent on us for everything, especially when they're young, and are still dependent on us for a lot, for their emotional well-being, especially as they grow and even become teenagers. And so taking a minute to just observe, what are they like? Because Jesus said, I need to become like them. Mm. And I don't often do that, sit and observe, like, I'm too busy oftentimes noticing the ways that they are like that I need to help them not be like, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like I want to take that into the rest of my day today of like, what can I learn from just watching what they're like? Because that's actually who Jesus says I need to become like.
Mm-hmm. That's a great word. Lastly, we need to trade aura for authentic presence. And I think, again, think about talking with your kids, like just show up real. Don't be curated. Don't have your phrase ready. Jesus was never like trying to get attention. He was never hustling for attention. He just was like, he had it because there was greatness. His authority came from that intimacy. And when someone has like a God-given authority, you want to follow him. You want to be around him. They're not begging for attention. You're giving it because you're like, there's something there. And so authentic presence is just such an important marker in our moment. I couldn't think of a better gift to give our kids and teach them right now is like the world is going to tell you to like put on this beautiful curated situation. But the more honest and raw and real you are, I mean, it's upside down kingdom stuff, the more effective, more powerful you're going to be. And I think with this, I think we just need to have a greatness that's reimagined. That's the idea. And as we're closing, is just that, you know, this idea, and we're obviously tongue in cheek, aura farming is a fun phrase, but at the same time, like it promises that admiration, it promises it will give you something, and Jesus offers actually transformation, you to become more like him. Aura farming builds on your image, Jesus builds on your person. And I think that's the thing that Jesus is constantly inviting us into, like, hey, live with me, abide with me. You can have a full life that's even defined by others as busy, but you can do it for the right reasons and at a pace that is in line with your soul, and you can do effective things for the kingdom. I mean, we see this, you know, there's people in our world as well that we get to connect with and know that their lives are so full and yet they're a peaceful presence wherever they're at.
Yeah.
And they've had to learn a whole new way of being. And I would just say that's maybe for some, that's a word. You have to be different. You have to have different rhythms. The moment I started, I mean, this is a silly example, but just to close with a story, when I started traveling more for intentional, whether that was speaking or all the different various things we end up doing, I had to learn really quickly, like, I can't have the same habits. I can't have the same rhythms. If I don't have a reentry plan, it gets really messy really quick. If I don't have clarity on how I'm going into a trip, out of a trip, what I'm doing on a trip, like, I like, honestly, that it sounds silly for some people listening. You're like, oh, you're weak. Maybe. But I know for me, it was like, oh, I need a different set of habits and rhythms and routines to sustain my soul in this new responsibility I have.
Yeah.
And I think we all have those different moments. And for some, that might be just entering into parenthood. What you did before does not work now. It's a whole different rhythm. And it's honestly going
to
be probably
one
a lot
kid
less.
To two or two yeah. kids to three. Or, yeah.
And for a lot listening, that might be the case. If you're in a career, it could be like you've been invited to do something more, but you don't want the thing that's more to undo you. And so how do you actually, you know, move from a place from just trying to do what the workplace says to wholeness? And so, you know, this conversation I think can be summed up best Matthew 11:28 in the Message translation. Actually, I have this bracelet. Giles and Brothers is one of my favorite spots, by the way. And I think they're going out of business. I think they are. Yeah. But you can engrave stuff. And I have Matthew 28 just on this little, it's on this little nail. And it says a reminder of this verse. And this is the verse in the Message, which is also my favorite. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. And that's the idea. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty tired. Most people listening are probably worn out. A lot of culture is burned out on religion. So I think Jesus' invitation is an aura. It's come to me, get away with me. And he does the recovering of our life. Yeah. So wherever you're at, if you need recovery of life, if you're tired, if you're worn out, accept that invitation. Try these practices, right? Try them in your own life, but also I'd say even use this as a script to begin to talk to your kids about, because I think this is a huge thing that we're trying to press into in a deep way for our own lives and our kids. Any other thoughts?
No. I'm ready to go home and live it out the rest of the day.
All right. Well, let's do that. Wherever you're at, go home and live it out. We'll see you guys next week.